Okay. I wanted to ask you how important photography has been in your family. Because you have so many photographs of your life, and I was wondering about the history of taking photographs in your family.
Well, I guess I'm the only one who has done that, because my mother didn't even have a picture of her mother. And so I guess they didn't think it was very important. But I got very curious and wanted to know who my ancestors were. So I wanted pictures. When I get one, I'd just keep it and I'd put them away. And I was very careful with them. So I guess I'm the only one in the family who did that.
Don't you have a few photographs, though, of your grandparents? Do you have those?
Oh, yes, of my mother and father and her father, but I don't have one of my mother's mother. Their house got burned in Texas, and her mother's picture got burned. And I didn't have too many in the first place, so I guess that's one reason I don't have any of her. So,
when did you start taking photographs?
Oh, as a teenager, we used to, on Sundays, that was our hobby. We'd go what you call Kodaking. We'd take out a little camera and go walking around the town and go to some little outing and take pictures of each other. And we lived in a little town called Terrell, Texas. There was an asylum there. And we didn't have a park we could go to, but they let us come on the grounds of the asylum and talk to the mentally ill people, those who were not harmful. And so we'd go around talking to them, and we'd take pictures. We didn't take pictures of them, though, but we'd take pictures of ourselves on the grounds, you know, because it was like a park to us. So I was a teenager when we started doing that. Then we'd take pictures on the school ground, but the school ground wasn't very pretty, like this ground where the mentally ill people were.
And what did you do with your photographs after you took them?
Oh, I put them in a little Kodak album, which I still have. Yeah, I still have my little Kodak album.
Do you have a family album, a larger album where you've incorporated photographs from your whole life?
Yes, I do. But the album is so long, so old that all the leaves have come apart, and it's not really in chronological order because the leaves have come apart, you know. But I do still have the pictures.
When you put the photos in, did you organize them in a certain way?
Yes, I did have them organized, but now I just have them, but they're not organized because the pages came apart.
Did you organize them chronologically or by subject matter? Do you remember?
More or less by subject matter.
And when do you look at your photographs?
Oh, when some members of the family are around and want to see some old photographs.
And do you then tell stories about the photographs? Which members of the family? Your grandchildren?
Oh, yes, mostly my grandchildren. So they'll know the history of the family.
I know that I've seen sort of a poster that you made of photographs from your life. Could you tell me about that?
Oh, yes, that was made on my 80th birthday. I had those on display at a party that my son had for me on my 80th birthday. And that was more or less in, I guess you'd call that chronological order. From, I think I have my baby picture on there, and when I finished high school and college, and all different phases of my life.
And you put that together yourself?
Yes, I did that myself.
And what was the response at the party?
Oh, people just thought that was wonderful. I said, when did you have time to do all this? I said, I just took time and did it.
Are there certain photographs that were in your family or that you had seen before from your life that you don't have, that you wish you had?
Oh, something that I don't have that I wish I had? Well, I can't think of any right now. Uh-huh. Well, of course, one of my grandmother, my mother's mother, I don't have her picture.
Right.
Yeah, I wish I had that, but that got burned up in the fire when Mama's house got burned.
And then the family photos from your family, from your parents, did you get those photographs? Are those you have those?
Let's see. Well, some of my aunts. That's right. I wish I had more pictures of my aunts, but I guess they must have gotten burned too. Yeah. No, that's right. I don't have any of my aunts too that I was very fond of. They all passed on now.
Do you have plans for your photographs?
Plans? Uh-huh. No, no special plans.
Okay.
Just want to hang on to them.
Yeah. Well, let's look at some of your photographs. This is the first photograph here.
Oh, yeah, that's my dad and me. His first little car that he bought. That was probably about 1909. And this was the little town where I was born, Tatum, Texas. There were only three cars in this town, and Papa owned one of them. And the two doctors on the other two. And he had me driving when I was 7 years old.
How old are you here?
I was about three there. And there was really no danger of me driving the car because there were only two other cars in the town. People were still using horse and buggies, you know. And my dad took me with him every place he went. So I watched him drive, and so it was easy for me to learn how to drive. And you just get the wheels in a rut, because they had dirt roads, and it would just hold the wheel, and it would guide itself, you know.
And the two other doctors who had the cars, who were they? Were they very prominent in the town?
Yes, Dr. Menifee and Dr. Young. And Dr. Menifee is the one who delivered me when I was born.
Were they black or white?
They were white.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Dr. Young was white too. They both were white.
And what is this building that?
Oh, that's my father's blacksmith shop. That's his little blacksmith shop. And so when he bought this car, he tore it down, put it back together, taught himself how to fix cars. He was a blacksmith at first. Then he taught himself how to fix cars. So this little shop was too small to fix cars and shoe horses too. So he built a larger building across the street. He owned the land across the street. He built a larger building over there for his auto repair shop. So he had two buildings. Had a little blacksmith shop over here and the auto repair shop. And the first gas station in this little town. And little circle drive and drive through and get the gasoline and fix his cars. And he painted the building. So that made it the best looking building in the town because it was only one street with businesses. And so his business was right on the main street.
How did he come to be a blacksmith?
Well, when he first got married, he was about 18. He had been raised on a farm. Because his father and mother had 11 children, and they farmed. But he decided he didn't want to be a farmer. So he went to this little town, because there was a sawmill there. And the man who ran the sawmill was an Irishman. And he gave my father a job working in the sawmill. And Papa was a hard worker, fast worker, too. And he was working in the sawmill. It was one of those hot days, and he stopped to wipe the perspiration off his face. And while he's standing there wiping his face, the foreman came up and hollered at him, "Get to work, nigger, get to work, nigger." So Papa got so angry that he went to the boss man and Mr. Paris was his name. I said, Mr. Paris, I'm going to have to quit. Quit? Jewel? What are you going to do? You're married now. What are you going to do if you quit? You got a wife to take care of. What are you going to do? And why are you going to quit? Well, your boss, your, what do you call him, the overseer or whatever, said, called me a nigger and told me to get to work because I was just wiping my face. He says, if I stay here, I'm going to get in trouble because I can't stand for nobody to call me a nigger and indicate that I'm lazy because I wasn't lazy. I was just wiping my face. He says, I don't blame you, Jew, but I don't see what you're going to do, though, if you quit. And he said, well, I don't either, but I can't stay here. He said, well, Jew, you know how to shoe horses, don't you? He said, yeah, my dad taught me that when I lived on the farm. He said, we need a blacksmith shop here in this little town. Why don't you open a blacksmith shop? He said, I don't have enough money to open a business. He says, see that spot over there in the corner? Yeah. Well, go over there and get you some lumber and build you a shop and pay me when you can. So he did that. He built, went over and got him some lumber and got a carpenter to help him. And they built this little blacksmith shop.
Mr. Paris must have really liked your father.
He did. He just thought of him as his extra son. And so Papa built this little shop and paid him later. And Mr. Paris was just like a father to him, you know. So he started that bit and did very good because he had no competition. He was the only person who had a blacksmith shop there. So he did all the horses that came to town. He was the man to go to.
Was Mr. Paris black?
No, he was white. Uh-huh. And he had this sawmill business. And he had lots of children, too. So we all loved him. I have a picture of Mr. and Mrs. Paris. They had lots of children also.
This is the second photograph.
Yeah, now that's my father's picture. Garage in the second town we lived in Terra. Oh no, that's out here in Los Angeles. That's his shop here in L.A. on 23rd and Central Avenue. But this looked like the one that he built when he moved to the second town in Texas.
This was your father's gas station here?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, he had a blacksmith shop at 23rd and Central Avenue, near where the Lincoln Theater is now. That's a vacant lot now. They tore the building down, and it's just a vacant lot in there now.
Okay, here's the third photograph.
And this is the car that my father drove out here from Texas. When we came to Los Angeles in 1924, we drove two cars. This was a Ford touring car. And then we drove the Ford coupe that he had bought me. Yeah, that was mine. And this was Papa's car. And I drove the little Ford coupe all the way by myself. I didn't want anybody driving my new car. You know how kids are when they got something of their own. They don't want anyone else to touch it, you know. But we stopped every night. We brought our tent along and camped every night in the tent. Mama had a little oil stove. We'd do our own cooking, just like a camping trip. It was really fun.
Is that how everyone traveled then?
Most colored people didn't have all that extra equipment, but they had to sleep out. You couldn't stay in the motel, so you had to sleep in your car or the best way you could, because you couldn't stay in a motel. But Papa had planned that on account of, he knew it was going to take us a long time to get out here.
Do you remember any events on the trip, or what it was like traveling through Arizona and coming to L.A.?
Oh, yeah, we had several different incidents. Some of the people were nice and some weren't. like when we got to Arizona. Well, the first thing my dad would do when we'd drive in the service station, he would find out if we could use the restroom, because we had a problem using restrooms. And some of them would say, well, we don't have restrooms for colored. So he wouldn't buy any gas if they didn't have any restroom for us to use. And the way he got around not buying the gas, he carried an extra 5-gallon can of gasoline in the back of his car, so he wouldn't ever run out of gas, and he wouldn't have to buy gas. And he'd always stop and buy gas before he'd run out. And so we got to, if they would say yes, oh sure, yeah, there's a restroom. And then he'd say, fill it up. He'd buy the gas, and he'd still have his extra 5 gallons in there. And so one place, though, in Arizona, we stopped at a place, and they had a restroom. They let us use the restroom. He was getting the gas. And they had a little eating place on the side, too. And I loved milkshakes and the malted milks. And so they had a fountain at this place. And while Papa was getting the gas, I went in there to get me a milkshake. And so I sat down at the counter where everybody else was sitting. So the man said, you have to sit at the table. Well, I'm out of Texas, and I didn't realize that I was being segregated when he said I have to sit at the table. Well, sitting at the table, it looked like I was getting special service, you know. I didn't realize I was being segregated. So I went over and sat at the table, and he came over and waited on me right away, you know. So Papa came in looking for me. He saw me sitting at the table drinking this malt. And he says, what are you doing sitting over here by yourself? And everybody else is sitting at the counter. I said, well, he told me to sit over here. Well, then you shouldn't have bought it. You shouldn't have bought it. He realized right away what they were doing, you know. And I said, well, I paid for it now. Come on, let's get out of here. And he was loud talking to them. And so we left, and I had to leave some of my milkshake because I hadn't finished it. But he was so mad, and this was Arizona too. He didn't know Arizona was prejudiced like that. And so we had to go on, and so he gave me a good lecture. Don't you ever buy anything when they start doing you like that. And but that's the way we did when they wouldn't let you use the restroom. He wouldn't buy the gas. So we came on into Los Angeles.
Did other black people do that same thing? They wouldn't patronize businesses that were prejudiced?
No, they didn't have that strategy. My dad was just so proud. That was his own little way of trying to break it down.
It's powerful.
Yeah, that was just his wish. That he satisfied himself. And another thing, he wouldn't call a white man Mister, because they wouldn't call him Mister. But he knew not to tell him that I'm not going to call you Mister because you won't call me Mister, because he knew he'd get in trouble if he did that. He was shrewd about it. The way he would get around it, he would call him Captain, Doctor, whatever title he could think of other than Mister. That satisfied him, you know. So they call him Jew instead of Mr. Deckard. Well, instead of him calling them Mister, he'd call them Captain so-and-so, Doctor so-and-so, Lieutenant so-and-so, Corporal, any title he could think of. And that gave him satisfaction, you know.
Okay, here's the next photo, number 4.
Okay, now we had been out here 3 months, and this is the day Papa was getting ready to go back to Texas. And this is the boy he brought along with him to do the to drive my car, and I wouldn't let him drive it.
So he came along just for the trip?
Yeah, because he worked for my dad in the garage, you know. But he brought him along so I wouldn't have to do all the drive, but I wouldn't let him touch my car. And that's my brother there, and my dad, and that's Nap. This might be my mother. I can't tell who that is. But they were getting ready to go back to Texas that day. They were getting ready to leave that day to go back. And I think my little Ford coupe was there, right there. I believe that's my Ford coupe.
Were they going back in one or two cars?
One, just one. My brother was just going to go part of the way with him in my car to help see him all. Just, they were going to go in, I guess this is the car they were going to go in. But they were lined up out front of the house to say goodbye.
Is this photo number 5?
Oh, that's my little Ford coupe. And the little girls that I had made friends with here. Papa made me go to summer school when I first came here. And I take my little car to school every day. And all these kids would get in my car. We'd have about 4 of them inside. 2, 4. There's 8 of us here. We'd have about 4 inside, and the other 4 would be hanging on the outside on the little
running board?
Yeah, the little running board. So one day the cop stopped us. He was so nice. He didn't arrest us. He just stopped us and told us it was against the law to do that, you know. Told us not to do that anymore. But that, they were all trying to get in this one little car. It was a one-seated car, you know. And 3 would sit in this. Well, I guess we must have had 5 inside, because 2 would be sitting in somebody's seat, a lap. So we must have had 5 inside and 3 hanging on the outside, you know. So these were sweet 16s. We were sweet 16s. Is that what it says? Oh, joy girls. Joy girls.
And they were all from, which school was it?
Los Angeles. Oh, well, we all went to Polytechnic High School. It was summer school, and that's where I met all these kids at summer school.
What do you remember about that summer school?
Well, the kids came from all over town because they only had one summer school open that summer. And so that meant kids came from the west side, east side, north side, south side. So I met the cream of the crop. They just came from all around. Since they didn't have schools open in different districts, they just had that one open, so everybody had to come. This was my main little friend. She went with me when I slipped off and got married. She's deceased now.
What's her name?
Anna Louise Griffin. Her father had a mortuary. He was in the mortuary business.
And where would you go out in the car?
Oh, I went to school in it every day. I drove to school every day. And then we'd go to the beach. After school was out, we'd go to the Santa Monica Beach, Inkwell. And any place else we had to go. We'd get in my car and go. And if we had to go downtown, we'd go in the car, because you could park on the streets downtown then. And go visiting. You used to visit people a lot then, because you didn't have radios. So that was popular, to go visit each other. And this girl was my good friend. I have a picture of her someplace around here. She's moved out of town, but she's still living. And we had this club called Sweet 16 Club. And we had lots of fun and have little house parties. Every weekend, somebody would have a little house party.
And who would come?
All the youngsters that we knew, we'd invite everybody to come to the house party. And we'd have a free piano player. Whoever could play the piano, all we had to do is invite him. It would be a boy. And they all turned out to be professional musicians. Haven Johnson was one, and another fellow named Johnson was another. I can't think of his first name, but he went to Seattle, Washington, and became a professional piano player. But anyway, they were youngsters around along with us. And we'd invite them to the party, and then when they'd get there, we'd beg them to play the piano. And they'd sit down and start playing. We'd have to beg them to quit.
Did they play dance music?
Yeah, they played dance.
To sing along to?
Well, dance music. They played jazz dance music. And they could really play. See, they got their practice in on us. So they became professional players.
What time period is this?
This was 24 and 25. Yeah.
This is photo number 6.
Okay, this is when Val Verde Park opened. This is about Saugus, California.
What
about
year?
43 miles from here. That was about 1927. And my husband had died then. That's my little boy right there. That's me, and that's my mother and my father, and a later friend of ours, Mrs. Neely. And that's Arthur Jr. And his father had died. So Papa took us up there to the opening of this Val Verde Park. It was a beautiful place. It's about 43 miles from L.A. So that was the opening of it.
And who went there?
Mostly blacks. It was a park. It belongs to the county. L.A. It's in L.A. County. And it was a county park opened for blacks. It was started by a black man named Sidney Dones. And they sold lots for $100 each. The lots were like 25 feet by 100 feet. Yeah, most of them were 25 by 100 feet. A few of them were 40 by 100 or maybe 50 by 100. But most of them were 25 by 100 feet for $100. And I bought one up there about 10 years ago for $1,800. And then I kept it a year and sold it for $18,000. So they've gone up now.
So it's still a popular place to go.
Yeah, and lots of Mexicans have moved in now. And they have built lots of nice little houses. But they won't let them build them on a 25-foot lot. They had to buy two of those lots. You see, if it's a 25-foot lot, you can buy the one next to it, so you have 50 feet, you see. So it's pretty nice up there. And the park has always been nice. They had a beautiful recreation center with a clubhouse there, a swimming pool. They always had that. And these little houses built around it, you know. So it's a nice recreational area called Val Verde Park.
Okay, here's the 7th photo.
Okay, now this is a young married women's club that I joined after I got married. My husband was still living then. And these women were older than I, but we were all young married women. And that's me, but my son wasn't born yet. That's me right there. And this is Woodley Jr. He became a famous football star for the Rams, made lots of money, and let's see, this, Berthella Brooks, her father was a black detective, one of the first black detectives we had here in L.A. I think they called him Sergeant Brooks. And this girl's father, Blodgett, he had the first black savings and loan company here, Blodgett Savings and Loan.
So there were some very prominent women in this club.
Yes, And this lady was a teacher. She's deceased now, and she's deceased. In fact, now this one's living, I'm still living. I believe they're all gone except one, two, just the two of us.
But they were also a lot older. They were older than
you. Yeah, they were older.
What kind of activities did you do?
We would meet. Now, this was on the west side of town. A few blacks lived on the west side then, but most of us lived on the east side. And this was...
What are the boundaries for the east and the west side?
Well, the east side then, we went up to McKinley Avenue from... I can't think of that next street east. Oh, Compton Avenue. Compton Avenue over to McKinley Avenue. And then Slauson Avenue south. Up to about 12th, about 9th Street, I guess, about 9th Street. No, 6th Street, because I knew some people lived down on 6th Street, Cirrus Avenue. It was all east side stuff. And then on the west side, there was a strip. On the west side, east side of Jefferson, not the north side of Jefferson, just the east side of Jefferson, down to about 37th Street, and the east, Normandy up to Normandy, up to the east side of Normandy Avenue, and. Vermont, up to about the west side of Vermont. Just a little strip in there. And this was on 35th Place near Raymond Avenue. They had a big house there. This is where my husband's grandmother lived. Mother Sally Lewis. This was out on her front yard. Was at her house, but she wasn't on the picture. And
so you would have meetings. How often? What would you do at the meetings?
Oh, we would have lunch, and we would bring our sewing with us, and those who had babies would bring their babies, and bring our sewing, and we'd sit around and talk and play with the babies and do our sewing. As I said, my baby wasn't born yet. And then later, after my son was born, it wasn't interesting to me anymore because I liked to play cards. I wanted to do more than just sit around and talk. So I joined another club where we played cards.
Did this club have a name?
Call it Young Married Couples Club.
And then your card club, did that have a name?
Oh, no, yes, this did have a name. It was called the Paramount Club. The Paramount. Yeah, the Paramount Club. That was it.
Did you do other things besides have the meetings where you talked and sewed and
Well, like at Christmas time, we'd have a meeting and have our husbands come along, have a special Christmas party, and have a regular big Christmas dinner, turkey dinner, you know, and have extra guests.
And how did you become a member?
Well, they invite you to join, you know. So when I got married, this particular girl here, who was a teacher, she invited me to join. And she also, when my husband died, see, I was only married 3 years and he died, and she came over to see me. She was very smart. She was a teacher. And she knew I hadn't finished high school. So she came over to see me after my husband died. And she said, "Verna, I think you ought to go back to school and finish high school." And she was my influence, you know, to make me decide to do that. Because I'm living with my parents, and they were telling me, "You don't need to work, because as long as we got a home, you have a home." See, I could have just listened to them and just not done anything, you know, been lazy. But she influenced me. Because she was up and going and very smart and progressive. And so I wanted to be like her. And so I decided, well, I'm going to go back to school. Better my condition, you know. She showed me those points. And so I always appreciated her. And she played the piano, too, beautifully. She could really play the piano.
So you went back to high school where?
Jefferson High School. And I didn't tell them that I had a baby. And, because I lived close to Jefferson. See, I lived on 58th Place near Hooper. And Jefferson was on Hooper and 41st. And I could walk to school, but most of the time I'd drive. And I didn't tell them I had been married and my husband was dead. Because I looked much younger than I was. But they found out, some kind of way they found out. And when they found out, they kicked me out of school because they had a rule then. You couldn't go mingle with the young kids if you'd been married and had a child. So they kicked me out. So I wasn't so disappointed because I found out the rule. But when I did it, first did it, I didn't know what the rule was. All I knew, I just wanted to go to school. And somebody just said, "Don't tell them," you know. But I found out what the rule was when they kicked me out. I wasn't so hurt because I knew I was doing wrong, you know. But later, I went to this school where it was okay for dropouts to go. Metropolitan High School is the one I graduated from, and you could go 4 hours a day for that one class that have English. 4 hours one day a week. I only had to go to the English class one day a week. I went every day, but each day I had a different class. And I'd spend 4 hours in each class every day. And so that really made it nice. And you got more out of it that way, too, because you really spend lots of time talking about English or whatever class you were in, you know. And so I really enjoyed that.
Here's photo number 8.
Oh, yeah, this is my best friend's 18th birthday party, Lavera White. That's Lavera right there. See, right up in there, that's Lavera White. Her mother gave her 18th birthday party, and she invited all the young kids. That was the younger crowd in L.A., and she had some good music. I've forgotten who played that night, but it was good music. It was a dancing party. Let's see. That's me right there. And let's see. Where's the fella I was with? I was with a fella who was a dancer, professional dancer. And his name was Sammy Warren. Oh, he's standing right in back of me, right there. That's who I was with.
Is this when you first came to L.A.?
No, this was after my husband had died.
What about what year? We don't have it on there.
Oh, I don't have the date?
We have it somewhere else, probably. The late 20s?
Yeah, it was the late 20s.
And was this kind of party common, or this looks like a very fancy party?
Yeah, it was common for people to give little house parties, you know, but this was a fabulous house party because she had, as we call it, the cream of the crop there at this party. And that was probably 1928, I guess, because my husband had died in 27.
Was this then at their home?
No, it wasn't her home. It was a home on 18th and Central Avenue that they rented out for parties. That building is torn down now. It was across from Miss Ross's sweet shop. This fella here, he became a dentist. Everybody was here, was in school, going to school then. But he's dead now.
Was that then the Jefferson High School students or Metropolitan? Or
well, they went all were, you know, different schools then. Because as I say, when we went to that one Polytechnic High School, there was only one school open during the summer. But when regular school was open, people went to different schools. Some went to manual arts. But most of them went to Jefferson because most of us lived on the east side. Those who lived on the east side had to go to Jefferson High. And some went to Manual Arts High. Some went to Fauché High. And they had a school called 20th Street School that some went to. And then some of these didn't go to school at all, like this fella here. He didn't go to school at all. He had finished, I guess. Oh, he was too old to go to school. And there was a fella here, I remember, who was studying to be a doctor. He was here visiting from Berkeley. He's over in this section. I remember him in particular that night because he was flirting with me. And I found out he's only going to be here that night. He was leaving the next day. I didn't want to get interested in him because he didn't live here, and he was going to leave the next day, you know. But he eventually moved back down here. He married somebody in Berkeley and moved back down here and practiced. Ishmael Flory, he finished UC Berkeley. He went to college in Berkeley, and now he lives in Chicago. He's still living.
How do you keep in contact with these people?
Well, his sister and I were very good friends, and we still write each other at least once a year. And whenever I go to Chicago, I look him up because his sister and I are still close. But lots of them are dead. Now, this good friend of mine, she died young. She died in 1936. And this is the girl who went with me when I got married. She died young, too.
Here's photo number 9.
One time we were trying to build a hospital called the Westview Hospital because the colored doctors could not practice in the white hospitals, and the colored patients could not go to the white hospitals and mingle with the other patients. They'd let you come, but you'd have to get a private room. You couldn't go in and put in a ward with other patients. Well, the average colored person couldn't afford a private room. So the colored doctors decided, well, we'll try to build our own hospital and to help the people who can't afford a private room. So we had to drive on to build a new hospital, a black hospital. So this was a hayride we were giving to raise money. It was a fundraiser. And these horses, this wagon had hay on it. And we were taking kids for a hayride. And that's me standing on the side there. And these are the Mills Brothers' children. You know the famous singers, the Mills Brothers? They were my neighbors at this time when we had this hayride. I lived around the corner from one of the Mills Brothers, Don Mills. And he had about six children. And about three or four of his children were on this ride. That's one, two, three of them right there. And so we stopped at Vernon and Central Avenue, and this picture was made then. And so this is the wagon that was taking us on the hayride.
And then did the hospital get built?
No, it didn't, because we never did raise enough money. We had a company that was going to lend us the money, but we had to raise a certain amount ourselves. And we just never could get that amount raised. But we raised enough to buy the land and pay for the land. The land was paid for. And they did get the basement of the hospital put in, but they never could get enough to put the building on top of it.